My name is David Cortman. I am the lead counsel for the petitioners in the Arizona Christian School Tuition Organization versus Wynn case, consolidated with Garriott versus Wynn. Just want to talk a few minutes today about the case. First of all, generally what it's about and what's at issue, and then to discuss the standing issue and the Establishment Clause issue on the merits. First of all, quickly, what the case is about is a challenge brought by state taxpayers against Arizona's tuition program, where they allow donations made by private taxpayers to 501c3s that are set up called school tuition organizations, or STOs. These STOs then receive applications for scholarships from parents, and then direct those scholarship money given by the private donations to schools of their choice. There are only a few limitations, and one of those is they have to give to at least two schools or more. And the issue here, as narrowed throughout the case by the now respondents, is that it violates the Establishment Clause because some of the STOs are only affiliated with religious schools. And certainly we'll talk about that as we go, as it's compared. There are about over 50 STOs currently that give scholarships to over 27,000 students each year, and I believe there's about $50 million in annual scholarship money. Turning first to the standing issue, because obviously the court has to reach that issue before it reaches any other issue, is that it's our position as the petitioners that there is no standing on behalf of any of the plaintiffs in this case on their basis of taxpayer status. Standing issue, generally speaking, there is no general citizen standing, and there is no general taxpayer standing. There are some exceptions to that, mainly the FLAST exception, which was decided by the Supreme Court, I believe, in 1968. And FLAST basically said if there is an extraction and spending of the taxpayers' money in support of religion, under certain circumstances, there would be standing. That case was based on Madison's Memorial and Remonstrance, where the local sheriffs would go around collecting money from people and giving it to preaching of the gospel directly to the churches. This case, though, we would see if standing was granted as an expansion of FLAST for several reasons. Number one, here, there is no taxing at all. What there is a decision not to tax in part, which we believe is completely different on several fronts that we'll discuss. Number two, there is no spending by the government of any money. We don't believe that a lack of collecting 100% of money is the same as the government spending it. And third of all, there is no plaintiff's taxpayer money at issue here, where the issue in FLAST was there had to be an extraction and spending of the plaintiff's money. There is no money at all of the plaintiffs involved in this case. So what that basically leads to is that there is no personal injury, and that's what's required to find standing. There has to be direct and concrete, and it cannot be the same as everyone else and all other taxpayers, and that's exactly the problem that we have here. Any alleged injury by the respondents is the same exact injury suffered, quote-unquote, by any other taxpayer. The injury that's claimed in the complaint is a reduction in the state revenue that's collected. There are several problems with that. Number one, it is certainly speculative at best, according to all the studies and the Daimler-Chrysler case, and that's because it cannot be definitively stated whether these tax credits actually increase the revenues by number one, saving the government money on public school expenses, which is about $10,000 per year per student, and also because it increases other economic activity in the private school, ordering books, hiring teachers, expanding facilities, those type of things. But also, too, interestingly enough, that would expand taxpayer standing well beyond FLAST, because it would extend to every decision by any legislature to tax anything less than 100%. Respondents argue, for example, that not taxing is the same as taxing and then spending. We certainly think that's a problem, because any decision not to tax 100% of income would be collecting less revenue than possibly could be, whether that's credits, deductions, personal exemptions. tax brackets set at certain levels, that certainly would equate and would expand standing well beyond what it was meant to be. There also are other problems with separation of powers and federalism issues that certainly arise in the standing context, and we believe those are exacerbated here, not only because you have a federal court overseeing state action, but you also have a federal court overseeing state legislative fiscal policy, and so you certainly have both of those aspects here. And related to the merits of the Establishment Clause claim, we believe this is a fairly simple and straightforward case, especially when precedent is examined. Cases like Zelman and Mueller and Witters and Zobrist clearly state that in order to have a problem, number one, there must be no secular purpose. Here, every court, including the Ninth Circuit, has found there to be the secular purpose of increasing educational choices. That what was unprecedented by the Ninth Circuit, though, was saying that somehow, because private citizens make decisions to send the majority of the money to religious schools, that can somehow retroactively undo the secular purpose by the government entity that passed the law in the first place, and there's certainly no precedent for that. Number two, it has to be the government who advances religion, and in this case, we don't have that at all. Any advancement of religion, which first of all we believe is factually inaccurate, has to be done by the government. Here, the program is completely neutral. It allows private citizens, in fact, all taxpayers, then private STOs, and then parents to make the decisions, and there is certainly no government advancing of religion based on all of the case law. At any advancement at all, which we don't believe there is any in this case, is done by private citizens. The other thing that's important, too, is that we have to keep in mind that certainly there are a larger percentage of religious private schools than secular private schools, so immediately you're going to have more of the money just percentage-wise going to religious schools, and that certainly is the case here. The fact that certain STOs are associated only with religious schools is not problematic for several reasons. Number one, again, it's private choice, not government choice. Number two, there are many STOs that are only affiliated with secular schools, and if respondents' argument were to carry the day, those secular, atheistic, humanistic, as some of the amicus briefs pointed out, they would be required to give to religious schools, and I think that would certainly not be amenable to them either. So it's simply set up where private parents, taxpayers, and organizations decide which schools to support, which I believe is the proper way to go, because the less government involvement you have these programs, the better it is, and that's exactly what goes on here. Respondents want more involvement by the government, but that would simply just create more problems than it solves. So that is a nutshell of the case. We are certainly looking forward to the court's decision here, and it is certainly our hope that the court will decide that the plaintiffs in this case do not have standing, and if they happen to reach the merits, we'll find it consistent with the Establishment Clause test. Thank you, and I appreciate your time.